Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1. With Olay Total Effects Age-Defying Day Cream. Over 100 awards without paying hundreds of euros.
Well, we move on to another powerful and extraordinary woman. There's a really brilliant article published in today's Sunday Independent. It's actually the cover story of their Life magazine, and it's written by the writer and podcaster Sophie White. Let me read just a couple of lines from it. Being a so-called high-functioning alcoholic is like starting a fire in your house and then devoting all your energy to preventing its spread. Every day you try to keep it from ripping through the rooms and devouring your family. I was dedicated to managing the inferno. It was an exhausting, unending exertion, a cycle of hangovers, inebriation, and shame that never resulted in any tangible change. Well, the title of that essay is Drunk Mother, drawn from a new non-fiction collection of essays by Sophie White, and she joins me now. Sophie, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Miriam?
Fantastic. Sophie, devastatingly honest. I was just saying that to Tom, my producer, and the cover. Stunning photo, by the way, by Kip Carroll on the cover of the magazine.
Oh, thank you.
Lots of people, Sophie, will know you, you know, for your columns and your successful podcasts like The Creep Dive and Mother of Pod. But tell us a bit more about you first. Who is Sophie and where did she come from?
I suppose, as is quite obvious from a lot of the pieces in Corpsing, My Body and Other Horror Shows, I went to art college when I was younger. I thought I was going to be an artist, really wanted to be an artist. When I was about 22, I had my first nervous breakdown. It was drug-induced, so a very particular kind of flavour of mental illness, I suppose. And my life derailed a lot then, and I suppose I sometimes feel like I've never quite gotten back on the course I thought I was sort of setting out on as a young woman. I became a chef, and I worked as a chef through my 20s, but I really did want to be a writer. I think I was afraid of the ambition of being a writer because, you know, I suppose it's a life of rejection and repeated failure. but eventually I got some courage, and I wrote my first book when I was 28, 29. And this is my fourth book. So it's my second work of nonfiction. And it's, I suppose my last two books were fiction and very much fun fiction. So I think in a lot of ways, I'm very known kind of for like writing, you know, escapist kind of funny, fun novels. And then, of course, Corpsing is quite a different little beast.
It's a fascinating book, Sophie, and you underestimate yourself. It's beautifully written, actually. In your writings, you've often discussed, I suppose, in the past, your relationship with alcohol. I mean, has it always been unhealthy? What's the difference, say, between, say, people listening now who like a glass of wine in the evening and you? What is the difference between them and you, Sophie White? Did you have a very bad relationship with alcohol?
Yes, I think the difference is so vast that it's almost hard to quantify here in a single even conversation. It's almost pretty much why I wrote a book. The whole book obviously isn't solely focused on alcoholism, but I suppose like the extract that you just read out very much kind of sums up the sort of volatility of being under the sway of addiction. And I suppose, no, I wouldn't say, I don't know if I was always 100% an alcoholic, but I do think that I've definitely always had a problem with the kind of concept of enough. I think in college, when I drank a lot and I took drugs, I, you know, was always the person pushing for more, more, more. And I, after my first breakdown, had a long period actually of not drinking at all, not using any kind of substance whatsoever, because my mental illness meant I was so fragile. I mean, I couldn't introduce anything else into that cocktail in my head, which, you know, was quite an almost hallucinatory sort of experience. You know, I experienced a lot of feelings that nothing was real, that people weren't real. It was very Truman Show-y, but a very sinister slant. And then I think when I returned to drinking in my late 20s, I really thought I had kind of wrested back some control and some equilibrium. And then, I mean, it was almost impressive, if it wasn't so devastating, just how efficiently alcohol and alcoholism like ransacked my life. I think with alcohol and addiction of almost every description, there is a sense when you are the addicted person that, like for me, alcohol for such a long time felt like the only thing that was keeping me alive until it was killing me. And then it was killing my life, and it was murdering my family and my children. And it is such, to be in addiction is such a lonely and limiting life. I think sometimes there is a sense that it's, you know, born out of a kind of selfishness or a self-absorption. And I just wish people could experience the isolation of it. The addiction is like a parasite on your brain. Your every thought is just hyper-focused on when you can get your next piece of medicine. And every person who loves you becomes an obstacle to that. And the absolute priority is protecting your addiction because you think it's your oxygen supply and you think you cannot do it without it. And it's a possession. It's a compulsion that is almost indescribable. And I really every day can't believe that I have put another day behind me where I'm not in, it's not controlling me at the moment, like touch wood. I feel like, you know, the second that I feel certain that I'm quote unquote free is the second I'm fearful and I worry about my babies again, because I think that's the relentlessness of this kind of illness and this state of being.
And before I get to how you eventually, and you did it yourself, Sophie, got off it. But I mean, you were still carrying on with your career. You were writing. You were a mother young, Sophie. You've, I think, three little boys, haven't you, in your 20s? I mean, those are physical and mental challenges at the best of times, you know, dealing with, you know, little kids.
Sure.
But you managed to keep on doing what you needed to do while still drinking at this high level.
Yeah, I think that such a big part of that kind of hyper productivity and kind of attempting to kind of, you know, reach those kind of superficial kind of outward milestones was actually another part for me of kind of protecting my like alcoholism, because I felt as long as I could present this kind of together front that, you know, that really nobody could accuse me. And certainly I could lie to myself, which is obviously the greatest deception that you're perpetrating sometimes as an alcoholic, you know. It's so painful to confront because, as I said, you think that it's the only thing keeping you alive until it's ruining, like spoiling and polluting your life, you know. So
how did you, in the end, Sophie, get off it? I mean, did you just one morning wake up and say, I'm not going to do this anymore?
No, I suppose I always felt with my drinking that I was searching for a level of numb and a level of oblivion that would be the right exact right amount. I feel like I was always experimenting with exactly what it was going to take to numb me and make me feel okay. And I mean that in terms of like bottles of wine, like, was it going to be one? Was it two? Did I need to continue to, you know? And I think that the thing is as well, with my drinking, like it's so out of step with other people's drinking that it gets to the point where you can't really drink comfortably in front of other people because you're managing yourself so much so as to not appear different or sick, you know? And so in the end, it's a relief to have time and space where you're alone and you can just dedicate yourself to this obsession. And so I suppose the last night, or what I hope is the last night of my drinking, came in early 2017. Sorry, apologies, 2018. And I think it was just a night where my husband was away, my children were in bed. And I mean, I obviously have such profound, acute shame around this. But my children were in bed and I just dedicated myself to finding the bottom of this thing. That's what it felt like I was searching for. I was looking for the bottom, the end of it, the part, the moment when it would feel right and I would feel like I had achieved just enough, as I say, of the kind of numbness. And, you know, that bottom doesn't exist. You know, it's an absolute cavern. It's a drain. You're pouring the medicine down this drain and it will never be full, you know. And so I, you know, that night I just was absolutely, you know, just soaked in the misery of it. And I think I shocked myself with kind of, I suppose, seeing the reality for the first time. There's no end to this. It's only going one way. You're not in control. And now you're actually, you know, you're risking, you know, the things you love the most in the world. And I then, you know, I went into, you know, a 12-step program. Like, I don't feel in any way, like, sometimes people say, well done for getting sober. And, like, I can't connect with that at all because it feels like, you know, just like such a bid for survival. That was what getting sober felt like to me. It started to feel like I had to, you know, I had to fight, but that it also, it wasn't my doing. It was the doing of so many people around me and the doing of so many incredible people like in my program, you know. And I think it taught me so much around shame, actually, because say in the rooms where, you know, people like me go to share, our experiences, I started to really understand that, like, the only way to, you know, you're never going to be free of shame. I mean, that's kind of an unrealistic goal, but the only way to kind of deal with it is to haul it out into the light, I mean. And, you know, it kind of, I suppose the antidote to shame is understanding. And, you know, in the program, I was met with so much compassion and understanding. My own family, you know, I'm so lucky for them. And then I suppose with this book, with Corpsing, which obviously deals with so much more than just alcoholism, but deals with mental illness and grief, self-harm. You know, I mean, it sounds like some of the darkest stuff, but people tell me they think it's funny too. But I suppose because it deals with so many of those things, I wanted, in writing it, I suppose I am seeking some kind of understanding for those things. And I suppose I really want the reader to feel a sense of being understood by reading what I've written, you know?
But it's also a testament, Sophie, to your strength of character that you know, you did stop drinking. I know you say you got help from everyone around you in the 12 steps, but you did it yourself. Interestingly, though, you were saying that you spent the week hiding from the internet. Are you still worried about reaction?
Oh, yes. Like, absolutely. I think I'm really thrown by just how overwhelming this week has been. I think that I have had 3 years, I've worked on this book for 3 years. I feel like I've had a lot of frontiers with this book, like from the first writings back in 2017, where I was writing with no intention of ever publishing. Like, I did not think this would ever be for public consumption. And then, you know, I kind of moved through the writing process and actually realized a book was taking shape. It was the, like, least premeditated thing I've ever written, in that there was no plan, whereas with my novels, you know, there's exhaustive planning before I write. But this book seemed to just kind of, just pour out in a way, in a way that was surprising to even me. And then I suppose I thought maybe that I had actually kind of rationalized away the fears a bit. You know, I gave the book to the people that, to me, the real life people in my life that matter the most, and said, like, please tell me you're okay with this. Tell me if you're not. I definitely at one point, went for a coffee with my incredible editor, Lisa Cohen, and was like, look, if you want to call this whole thing off, like, I totally understand. Like, if you're just being polite in continuing this, let's cancel, you know? And then, like, as I said, I feel like I came to a point of feeling more and more like, okay with what is in the book, until this week when I suddenly realized, oh my God, what have I done? I think I had like several what have I done moments. Even like this morning, like I've been up since 4 a.m. and like stress knitting in advance of just talking about it, you know? Because I think, well, in a book, there's so much space and room in a book to like express just so much. And I suppose with so much, especially creative nonfiction writing, you're appealing for understanding from your reader, and you're setting out such a kind of a complex story, really. And, you know, and you're really hoping for the best. Whereas I think explaining yourself is excruciating, especially because I suppose you make art so that you don't have to explain yourself. And then the irony is everyone wants to ask about that art. And that's so tough. But I think as well, what I'm really happy with in the end with Corpsing is that, as I said, it started as not a book, and over 3 years it became a book, and it became a book about something I didn't even know it was going to be about. When I first started Corpsing, I was still drinking, and I was in a kind of a season of really profound grief. My dad, who I just adore so much, I have a picture of him here, like, as to give me luck. He had early onset Alzheimer's, and there was for us as a family this like purgatory of illness that it just seemed like it was going to be infinite when we were living it. You know, his decline was so, it was gradual, and then it was a speed descent. It was so abrupt. For the last years of his life, he didn't know my name, you know, he didn't really speak. It was so hard to connect. I was so afraid of his illness, and I was so afraid of him dying. And I was in a state of such extreme denial, that I even remember like pronouncing everyone around me as being in denial. I thought my mother was in denial about what was really happening. And then on the day that he actually died, it was like, a wave crashed over me. And I realized that the grief I thought I had done in watching him go had actually, it was a tsunami, and it hadn't even remotely hit yet. And so I think a lot of people who have already read the book now this week are talking to me a lot about how raw they find it. And I think that's because I wrote so much of it from this like state of really, really, really deep grief. And then I suppose I wrote the rest of the book as I lived it. And I never really went back to sanitize anything. I just edited, and I didn't really want to kind of make excuses, and I've tried to stay true to that. I did find that the kind of whole terrain of guilt, grief is so unexpected, I think, until it happens to you. And I think it's so universal then in other ways.
It's
you can't relate.
It's a really wonderful book, Sophie. And since you mentioned your dad, many of us in here knew your beautiful father, Kevin Linehan, and a beautiful, beautiful man he was. And I know I haven't time for you to tell me this, but you actually, I know, burned a copy of your new book, Corpsing My Body and Other Horror Shows, and scattered those ashes where your dad's ashes are scattered, which is incredibly moving. Reaction from some of my listeners, very quickly, Donal Casenlock says, Sophie's description is incredibly powerful and eloquent. Best wishes to her. Adele Coffey says Corpsing is unputdownable. Another listener, Sophie, says this description of addiction is exactly how it is. And I'll bring you the last one. Miriam, very honest conversation with Sophie. I don't read many books, but I will definitely be reading this one. I last drank in 2008, having wreaked havoc with the loved ones in my life. I got very lucky. My wife loved me throughout. She's a remarkable person whom I owe my life to. Listen, Sophie, it's a great book. As I said, Corpsing, My Body and Other Horror Shows, published by Tramp Press. Well done you, Sophie, for your courage and your openness and your honesty. And thanks for chatting to me today.
Thank you so much, Miriam, and thank you for your words about my dad.
Yeah, beautiful man. Thank you so much, Sophie. Mind yourself.